The gospel verse is Mark chapter 13, verses 1 through 8. As he came out of the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what large stones and what large buildings." Then Jesus asked him, "Do you see these great buildings? Not one stone will be left here upon another. All will be thrown down." When he was sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked him privately, "Tell us, when will this be, and what will be the sign that all these things are about to be accomplished?" Then Jesus began to say to them, "Beware that no one leads you astray. Many will come in my name and say, 'I am he,' and they will lead many astray. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be alarmed. This must take place, but the end is still to come. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places. There will be famines. This is but the beginning of the birth pains." The word of the Lord.
Sometimes I like to listen to this radio program called This American Life, and it's a program that just kind of covers different themes, and people tell stories around different themes. And I was listening to one week, and it was themed around the concept of the breakup. And it was stories of people having things break up in their lives. And the first segment of this program was about a young woman who had gone through a relational breakup with her boyfriend. She had been with him for a number of years. She really loved him. He meant a great deal to her. And one day, her boyfriend goes up to her and says, "Sorry, I want to break up. It's not you, it's me," kind of thing. And she is devastated, right? She's lost her boyfriend, and she's just, you know, so low, so down. And as she's devastated, she's looking for things that kind of help her work through that. And she starts listening to Phil Collins a lot. Some of you might remember, especially in the 80s, Phil Collins was big. And Phil Collins has a lot of songs about breakups. He's actually kind of an expert in it. He's been through 3 marriages, and none of them have quite worked out, unfortunately. So he knows breakups, and he has lots of songs about them. And she was just kind of singing along to those songs. And then as she starts doing this a lot, she thinks, "Hey, I want to write a breakup song. This seems like a good way to kind of cope with your depression about breakups." So she decides she's going to write a breakup song. Her problem is she's not a songwriter and not really that musical, so she's like, "How do I do it?" So she starts thinking about this and talking about this in the program. And then it turns out she remembers that she has a friend who actually tours with Phil Collins, works on in his touring group. And so she reaches out to this friend and says, "Is there any chance you can like hook me up with Phil Collins so I could talk with him about this?" And strangely enough, he does connect with her, right? The friend is able to get Phil Collins to call her, and they have this 45-minute discussion about, like, at one point, she's just describing her breakup and how sad she is. And Phil Collins starts talking about his breakups. And it's really funny. I mean, Phil Collins starts kind of, like, counseling her, this rock star guy. And they call the segment Dr. Phil, which I thought was pretty funny. And so they're talking about breakups. And after a while in this conversation near the end, the girl says to Phil, "Do you think I'll ever stop feeling bad like I am now?" And Phil Collins responds in his British accent, you know, kind of, "Well, but do you kind of like feeling bad, don't you?" That's kind of how he talks about it. "I don't think you really want to get over it," is what he says. "I think you're kind of enjoying it. So that's the kind of dilemma you have to sort out." And the girl says, "You really have me pegged. It feels like important or big or something. Like it feels like I felt so much for him when I was with him, and the only way to still feel that strongly about something is to not let it go." I really thought this part was powerful, where she admitted that she didn't really want to let go. Because I think it's so true that sometimes when something falls apart in our lives, when we feel loss, of course we feel hurt. And even though sometimes we want to stop hurting, sometimes there's a part of us that doesn't want to let go of the hurt. Because it's so hard for us to imagine life without whatever it is we lost. You know, holding on to that hurt becomes a way of keeping it alive. And holding on to that hurt almost starts to feel like the most important thing in our lives. That fear that if we let it go, there might not be anything else important. Well, today we come to a really fascinating story in the gospel about these themes that involve things like loss and fear and hope. And in this story, Jesus is in Jerusalem. They're walking past the temple of Jerusalem, Jesus and his followers. And the Temple of Jerusalem is this great, big, impressive, beautiful stone building, you know, stones bigger than people. And one of them kind of just points out innocently, Jesus, that's an impressive building, isn't it, right? Look how big the stones are. And Jesus' response is, yeah, but the temple's going to be destroyed, right? Just kind of flippantly says it. And this shocked his disciples, right? And we might remember from the Old Testament stories why this shocks them so much. The temple wasn't just someone's idea in Israel. The temple was actually part of the promise that God gave the Israelites. God told them to build it, and he said that when you build this temple, the temple will be a place that you can come and pray, and my presence will actually live in the temple so that you can connect with me, right? So this is the whole mindset of the Jewish people at this time, and here's Jesus saying the temple's going to be destroyed, and in their minds, they're probably thinking, well, no temple, no presence of God, right? I mean, that's a pretty bad thing if the temple gets destroyed. Well, Jesus says, well, it's going to be destroyed, but don't be afraid, right? Don't be afraid. Even though the temple's going to be destroyed, life will go on, and God's plan for this world will continue. And then from here, Jesus goes on in this section to talk about different challenges that his followers can expect to meet. And I think us today, right, we can expect to meet too. He talks about wars and rumors of wars and earthquakes. And I think basically all the bad, challenging stuff that we might experience personally and just together living in this world. And again, as he talks about all this bad stuff, Jesus says, don't be surprised. Don't be alarmed when this stuff happens, right? These things are going to happen until the last day. And so, you know, don't be alarmed. Well, I want to think with you about what Jesus is really trying to say in this section. What's the importance of Jesus' words here? So what's he trying to say? Well, first I wanted to think with you about something Jesus is not trying to say. In this paragraph, he talks about, right, wars and rumors of wars, and he says the end is not to come. And it's funny, we often take this section as if it's a prediction section of what the end of the world will be like, right? People read chapters like these, and they try to comb out the details. Okay, this stuff's happening, and therefore, if we look in the world, maybe we can figure out if the end of the world is about to happen. And it's ironic that we read it as an end of the world prediction, because Jesus is actually making exactly the opposite point, right? What Jesus explicitly says here, in quotes, is, "Do not be alarmed. These things," meaning wars, rumors of wars, bad stuff, "don't be alarmed. These things must take place, but the end is still to come," right? It has not arrived yet. These things are not a sign that the end of here is here. These things are a sign that it is still to come. And I think what Jesus is doing here is he's reminding us that wars and turmoil and just bad stuff sometimes happening is just the status quo of the world, right? It's not proof of anything. It doesn't prove that the world is about to end, right? Bad stuff has always happened. It doesn't prove that God is mad at you, right? Bad stuff just happens sometimes. So Jesus is saying, even if you're a follower of me, right? Even if you're a Christian, don't be alarmed. Don't be surprised when things sometimes go badly in life. Don't let that destroy your faith as if something's gone bad, you know, God must not exist or something, right? Jesus says, this is life. This is the way things go, unfortunately. So that's the first thing, just not to be surprised that the world is not perfect, even for people who follow Jesus. And then secondly, I think Jesus is encouraging his followers not to let fear take over their lives, especially when we meet hardship. Now, the idea of not letting fear take over our lives is actually not just something that he kind of emphasizes here, but Jesus actually talks about fear a lot in the Gospels. Fear and not letting it take over is actually one of the main themes he likes talking about. If we look, for instance, in the New Testament, there's this big sermon called the Sermon on the Mount where he talks about lots of different things. And one of the things he really hones in on is this section where he keeps on saying, do not be afraid, do not worry, right? Do not be afraid of your future, don't be worried about what you'll have, right? Do not be afraid. Well, why is fear such an important issue for Jesus? Well, I think the reason is that Jesus is all too aware that fear can sometimes become an obsession for us. Fear can become not just a thing in our lives, but it can become almost a sick foundation in our lives. It can take over our lives. And fear is a great motivator, after all, right? I hope you all know that politicians and the media and things that are trying to sell you things are constantly trying to make you feel afraid, right? That's actually part of their strategy. People in politics or media or marketing know that if they can make you feel angry or afraid or inadequate, then they can influence you, then they can control you, right? Be afraid of this and vote for me because I'll help you deal with this. Support this because you're afraid. Don't support this because you're afraid. Buy this because you're inadequate, right? This is something that people use. Fear is a wonderful motivator for those who want to control people. I think of this in my own life. In college, I kind of got into some of the cable news programs. There was one channel I watched particularly, and I kind of got into it. I got into the political talking heads that were there. And I just, you know, at that age, kind of figuring out the world, thought it was really interesting. But the more I started watching it, the more I'd hear these talking heads talking, and they started having an effect on me. I started noticing that as I listened to them yap about this, that, this is horrible, this is bad, this person's messing up our country, I started to take on a lot of anger and fear in my own life, right? I'd listen to it, and I'd get worked up, and I'd think, you know, what's wrong with the country, and what's wrong with this, and why do these leaders do this, and why don't we have these leaders? And I'd get all worked up. And what was really scary, when I started to notice this in myself after a few months, is I noticed that I actually kind of enjoyed being angry, right? That it was kind of part of the enjoyment, was I could get worked up and sort of start judging the other side. And after a while, as I started considering my faith in relationship with what I was doing to myself, being listening to these programs all the time, I realized that these programs weren't doing anything good for me, that they were actually keeping me in this place of fear and anger, and that these weren't making me a better person. They were actually making me a worse person. And so I've kind of stopped watching cable news, especially as kind of a regular practice. I didn't find it helped me. So that's one side of fear that sometimes people get caught into. I think about this kind of silly controversy that I don't think a lot of people have been upset about, but there's been some, about Starbucks and their Christmas cups, right? Apparently Starbucks is going from cups that have holiday paraphernalia on them into cups that are solidly red, and some people think it's evidence that Starbucks hates God and that religion is falling apart in this country, right? It's as if they think that, you know, if I don't get my religion from Starbucks, how am I going to believe in God, you know? It sounds silly, but this is kind of the kind of fear that sometimes people encourage us to fall into, as if we constantly have to be afraid that Starbucks is going to steal Christmas like the Grinch, right? That Christianity is going to fall apart because of the colors of Starbucks' cups. I think about a few years ago, a guy named Harold Camping, who was this kind of Christian leader, and he was one of these Christian leaders who was really into the end times, really into guessing when it would happen, really into telling people that they needed to watch out because it was close. And he had this big prediction that had been going on for years that the end of the world was going to come in 2011. And he had this whole kind of media arm that kind of got this messaging out. He had a thing called Family Radio, had lots of money from donations. They had paid $5 million for a billboard in California telling people the end of the world will happen in 2003, right? Sort your life out. You're about to meet God. $5 million. Lots of people who followed him actually were selling off their stuff and selling their homes and kind of de-investing themselves in the things of their life because they thought the world was going to end. And of course, as we know now in 2015, the world did not end in 2011. But again, for him, faith became this thing that was all tied up with fear for the future and when the world was going to end. Well, I mentioned these different examples just as examples of how things become so fearful in our lives, how fear takes over even in our faith lives where fear is the primary motivator. Jesus says how things will come along saying, I am he. And these are kind of different examples of this, where things come along and say, this is the most important thing in your faith, to be afraid for this reason. So fear and anger are great motivators, but the problem is that even though they're very effective motivators, they're not healthy ones. Right? Fear leads us nowhere that's good. Fear keeps us miserable. Fear closes our hearts to God and neighbor instead of opening our hearts like Jesus wants them to be. So Jesus tells us in this reading and in other readings, let go of your fear. Don't let it control your life. Trust in God that God will make things well at the end of the day and that God has a plan for your lives and for the world. Well, as we hear this just kind of simplistic, almost, do not be afraid message, you know, we might come with some objections to Jesus, right? We might point out that fear isn't always a choice, right? Sometimes it seems like an impossible commandment, Because sometimes things just happen in life that we're afraid of. Things just happen. A crisis happens. Something awful happens in the world, like happened in Paris, and fear just happens. And isn't fear part of being human? Can we really avoid it? Well, I think in some sense this is true, right? Fear is not completely a choice. Fear is not something we can completely avoid. And I think actually if we look in the Bible and in the Gospels, even Jesus, I would argue, shows that sometimes he probably felt fear. I think especially of the story of him in Gethsemane, the Garden of Gethsemane, the night before his crucifixion. And it says that Jesus is there with his disciples, and he's deeply, deeply in prayer. He's greatly disturbed because he foresees that he is about to lose his life. He is about to be killed. And he says these famous prayers. The first prayer goes something like, God, if it's possible, please take this cup from me, right? In other words, he's praying to God, if it's possible to spare me from this crucifixion, please do so. I don't want to be crucified, right? I would argue that this is a prayer that suggests that Jesus was not excited to be crucified. He was afraid of it, naturally, like we would all be. And so that's the first prayer. But then secondly, Jesus comes along and he does another prayer, right? He comes along and he says, on top of that prayer, but let it be done according to your will, not mine, God. Right? Let God's will be done in the end. I trust you, God, to do what needs to be done in my life. In other words, even though Jesus feels fear, Jesus in his prayer does not let fear or hurt or anger control him. He trusts God that even though the cross is going to hurt and it's going to lead to death initially, he also trusts that it's going to lead to new life for himself and for the life of the world. He lets hope control him rather than fear. And I think this is Jesus' basic message in the story today, right? He's not saying that we can avoid bad stuff. He's not saying that we could avoid fear altogether. Of course we can't. We see in Paris this awful slaughter. And of course bad stuff happens. Of course we feel afraid. Of course that's part of being human, right? He's not lying to us that bad stuff isn't going to happen. He's not lying to us saying that we're never going to feel afraid. But rather, Jesus is reminding us not to let fear be the primary power in our life, right? He's saying that fear is not the only way to deal with challenges and things we can't control. There's another way to approach the future, and it's the way of faith, hope, and love, right? It's a way of trusting that in the end, God is going to make things right. God has a plan. And so this week, as you live and in your life as you live, we know that bad stuff's going to happen. We know that fear is going to be a reality. But we can also remember that Jesus has given us permission not to let fear control our lives. Thanks be to God. Amen.